So let me tell you what I've been doing today. Well, really for the past 2 days. The kids have discovered, well, those Android kids have discovered that some of those Android phones come with the infrared sensors, or senders, I guess, inside the phones.
Yeah.
And so they have discovered the app that can turn things on and off. And so they are messing with my TVs in the cafeteria.
Don't you just love that?
Here's the thing. I think it's funny. I mean, personally, I think it's hilarious because, I mean, if the kid's going to be smart enough to do that kind of stuff, I mean, it's a pretty smart kid to be able to find those things. And but, you know, it's just sort of distracting when all of a sudden the TV switches over to Netflix and it's trying to connect, so.
Yeah, and you know, this is kind of mean. I think I've told you this already, what I did the first time it happened at ours, and it was right when I had first come back to this school district, so a lot of the kids in this the high school didn't really know who I was, so they took me serious still. And so one of them turned off my TV. I walked over, I took their phone, I uninstalled the app, put it back, said don't do it again, and went and unplugged all the TVs.
It's I want to unplug the TVs to make a point, but they won't let me do it. So,
yeah, I was just doing it just to be a turd. They probably caught me in a bad mood.
well, the principal has said that it has now become his personal mission to find out who's doing it because it just kind of bothers him a little bit.
I bet it's more than one, though.
But to fix the problem, I just put electrical tape over the infrared sensors on the TV and just called it done.
Oh, yeah.
Granted, it kind of inconveniences me a little bit because I either have to figure out a way to make the TVs turn on and off by themselves or with some kind of home automation, or I just have to go push the button. And more than likely, I'm just probably just going to go push the button.
I got a suggestion, but I don't think we have time on the show.
No,
But it
we're not.
involves an ATtiny 85.
Yeah, we're not doing any of that. I'm not soldering anything together.
But it would be so cool.
I know, but I'm not doing any of that. So,
you could make the robotics kids do it.
we don't even have a robotics kids.
Never mind.
Yeah. So before we get into the second part of our tools of the trade topic, I do want to mention a couple, well, really just one thing, a follow-up. It seems like a while back, well, it's been kind of a ongoing conversation, this whole Windows 10S thing, this low-cost version of Windows to put on these low-cost laptops to compete with Chromebooks. And then we always made the comment that Microsoft likes to change the names of everything, and things come and go with Microsoft. It's like they announce something and then they decide to make it go away. Well, in a strange turn of events, Microsoft Windows 10S has gone away, and they have replaced it with S mode. And now we know that the S is going to become a meme among Microsoft and to what this mode actually stands for. But it's just kind of ironic that here Microsoft's going to do this push, and then all of a sudden they're like backpedaling it, and it's just going to turn into like, hey, we're going to turn some features off.
Yeah, and it's actually going to be in Windows 10 Professional, and it's going to be an S mode feature in that. And for the record, S is store. I mean, the second letter is T, not H. So,
Yeah.
but I
If it
actually
was
kind of
Apple, it would
like
be
this.
slow.
No, you got to wait till it's a year old first. But it's neat. I hope they give you some more group policy management stuff with it since it's a mode now that you can enable and disable. But yeah, I mean, I guess you could look at it as a good thing. At least they're not going to be selling crippled hardware.
And that's the thing. I mean, it's like they're going to come out with this $189 laptop. I mean, who isn't going to just go ahead and pay the $50 more and get the Windows 10 Pro and just have the full capability of it?
Yeah, and I guess now they just avoid it altogether being S mode as part of Pro.
Yeah, and so now you just get your Windows license. And a lot of times schools, and another thing is like they're marketing this towards education. A lot of schools already have school agreements, so they've already have Windows 10 for all of their devices. And so what's the point in making them buy another version of Windows when they already can just throw what they already have on there? And so to me, it makes complete sense just kind of making this a mode on top of Windows Pro that you can enable and disable.
Yeah, I really like the decision with it. I mean, because I've never been a huge fan of having quite so many SKUs for the same operating system. I mean, honestly, I don't like the fact that there's a Home Edition and Pro Edition still, much less the Workstation Edition. I think
yeah,
there
there's
should be
Home,
a.
there's Pro, there's Workstation, there's Enterprise, there's Education.
Yeah, and let's not forget about all the specific country editions like the N versions and whatnot. I think there should be a server side and a client side. And then it would free up a lot of resources of them where they wouldn't have to spend so much time, hey, let's find a way to take this little feature out, those kind of things.
Yeah, and like me personally, I use the education build for my school, where it's like, well, I'm an education institute, well, I'm just going to go ahead and push out the education.
You see, and I use the professional edition.
And I don't really even know if there's that much of a difference between professional and education. I mean, the only thing that I can see is like the few times that I've like clean installed professional, it wants to turn on BitLocker. I think by BitLocker, is that the encryption thing, BitLocker?
Yeah, it is. If the machine that you have is a secure boot enabled, it'll like to use BitLocker. But BitLocker is really not a problem in an Active Directory environment because the BitLocker keys are stored in the directory.
Well, it becomes a problem when I'm trying to image, because the drive is encrypted, and it in CloneZilla, only the way it does in TFS drives, as you know, it's like it only copies the data that's actually being used. Well, it will copy the entire drive, and then there's no guarantee
you'll
that
have,
it'll boot
you'll
afterwards.
Have 500 gig images when you only need 10.
And so that's really the only difference, is like I saw professional wants to have BitLocker on by default and education doesn't, and so that's kind of why. And plus, it's like when Candy Crush and like some other stupid games kind of installed themselves with professional, I was like, okay, no, this is not happening. And I think education like stops that.
Yeah, nothing says professional like Candy Crush.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm fine with it. I'm kind of excited about it, but like you, it's like they need to kind of simplify. I can get why they kind of do home and professional, because I mean, does the home users need the ability to connect to an Active Directory domain and stuff like that? No, they don't need
But a lot of home users would probably utilize the Hyper-V features.
Yeah, or even some of the other stuff like is BitLocker. The encryption. Yeah, BitLocker. I mean, I run the encryption on my Mac. I mean, FileVault, I run it.
Yeah.
But I'm also not imaging my machine, so.
No, not at all.
So, yeah, I full-heartedly encourage using BitLocker and stuff, but I just can't have it on by default when I'm trying to set up images. And plus, between that and trying to do the sys prep, and BitLocker just does not like each other, even though it's like you think, it's like you have to turn it on, you have to let it finish, and then you have to turn it off and then let it finish, and then you can image. And so it was just taking way too much time.
Yeah, but you were in a different situation than me. You actually had good hardware that supported secure boot. I have old stuff that doesn't.
I put Windows 10 on something old today, and I was actually kind of surprised that it actually ran. So
it does run really well. In fact, I have some machines that were donated from a prison that are i3 2100s, dual core little i3 things. Windows 10 runs leaps and bounds better on them than Windows 7, especially since the Spectre and Meltdown patches.
I've actually seen that with our Dell Optiplex 9020s that we have for our teacher machines. To me, it actually seems like Windows 10 actually runs faster than Windows 7 on the same hardware. And so I don't know if like Microsoft has like optimized it to just be a lot, to make it trick your mind and make you think that it's a lot quicker than what it used to be or what, but I like it.
Well, I can actually tell you what it is.
They got rid of Arrow?
Well, that was one thing, but it was when they moved to the Windows 1 core. I mean, they had this one base core that ran on everything from phones to Xboxes to servers to Windows, and it had to be really highly optimized to do that. So they just have better code now.
Well, that's good. I like it.
You remember when Vista came out?
I try not to.
I know. And then you remember Windows 7.
Yes.
The only difference between those two is a year of optimization.
Yeah.
And you remember how much better it ran than Vista.
It did.
So, I mean, I think if they just slowed down and took their time, maybe not as much time as they took to get rid of Windows XP to make code right, it'd just be better for everyone.
Well, I think they're going to be taking the Apple approach, and they're just going to kind of keep updating Windows 10.
And I love it. I love it. And what was the other one that they started? They've got another operating system that they're starting to build, and they took the name from somebody else that's already got one.
That would be all you, brother, because I do not know.
I know. I'm wanting to say it's called Andromeda.
That sounds kind of familiar.
I know. There was another project not too long ago that was using the Andromeda, but Microsoft's actually developing another OS called Andromeda.
And that kind of intrigues me. It's like, what's going to be next? What's going to be after macOS? I mean,
iOS?
What's going to be after Windows 10? To me, I think they should have dropped the number on Windows altogether and just called it Windows.
And you actually, if you've noticed something, if you go into your volume license manager, they did.
They just call it Windows?
It's just called Windows Pro.
I like
Windows
that.
Education.
And that way you can just, and so maybe that's the and that's kind of the route that macOS is doing. They kind of drop the, it used to be like OS 10, and it's like OS 10 dot whatever, and it's called in some cat name or some mountain. Well, they're still doing mountains.
I really miss the cats.
But now they're calling it just macOS, and so they've kind of dropped the macOS 10. It's just macOS, and so that's kind of like same thing. It's like Windows and macOS, which is fine. I mean, it's for a branding perspective, I kind of like it better. So.
Yeah, and it made sense to call it macOS 10 when it came out because they replaced version 9. But then they kept macOS version 10 for 13 editions.
Yeah. I mean, really, that's the number. It's still 10.13 or whatever. Next it will be 10.14.
They just need to blow everybody's mind next year and release macOS 11.
Well, the thing is, they're like skipping numbers now, so it'd probably have to go straight to 12.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm sure 11's bad luck somewhere.
Well, no, it's the going trend is to skip 9. So they skipped, they did iPhone 8, and then they did the iPhone 10, and so, or the iPhone X, or the X10.
But they did
or whatever
do iOS
9.
It.
And so everything seems to be skipping 9, so.
Yeah. So I don't guess I can look forward to a Galaxy S9. They're probably going to change it something.
Yeah, they'll probably go to the Galaxy S10, straight to it.
Yeah.
But, all right, so a couple of things before. I also wanted to mention a couple of things that I've found, discovered. This kind of affected me, and it may affect some of our listeners out there. SeaWorld, you know, the place where they do bad things to orca whales or whatever, apparently, they're doing this, like, free thing where kids that are under 5 can get in for free, and teachers can get in for free.
Yes.
And so all you have to do is you have to go to these websites, and we'll throw the links in the show notes. Fill out this information. I've already got the pass for my kid. You got to have some number, like some teacher number off your teacher certificate or something, to be able to get the teacher pass, whatever. And I'm going to do that for my wife. But I just thought I'd share that. I thought it was kind of neat because we've been wanting to take our 3-year-old, which will be 4 this year. We're probably going to take him to San Antonio this year to go to SeaWorld. And now we only have to pay for my ticket because I'm not a certified teacher and I'm over 5 years old. So,
are you?
I yeah, you just a little bit. Year. Just a little over 5, about almost 3 decades. But but it's just kind of a nice thing, a little free thing. Some people are not into that because of some of the stories of the way that they treat the animals or whatever, but to each his own. I think my kid will enjoy it, so well, I'm going to take him to go see that probably. And so I just wanted to share that information. I know that some of us may have family members that are teachers or little kids that may be interested in that. And I think it's for all the SeaWorlds, and so I think there's a bunch of them across the country, so it's not just for the one in San Antonio. I think there's one in, like, Florida, maybe in California. So,
yeah, and honest, me and my wife have done this for 3 years in a row now. It does work. And it works well. And what's really cool, it's not a one-day trip. It's a season pass.
Yes.
So,
yes,
I mean,
I've
if
noticed
you,
that.
Yeah, and we actually, that's actually our spring break trip every year is to go to San Antonio and take our kids to SeaWorld, man.
Oh, that'll be fun.
Yeah. Every year we do that one. So I may run into you.
Well, I don't think we'll be going on spring break because I'm thinking that's kind of where they're announcing where we're thinking we're going to be moving some people around. So I think my spring break is pretty much shot.
It's pretty
as
much
far
tied
as
up.
Being off, so I'll probably have to be working, which is fine because I'll get to count those as some of my contract days, and I'll have a little bit more time off during the summer so that I might can work it in then. So, which is
yeah,
fine.
But it's real enjoyable. I mean, and your kid's 3, and that was when we started taking Mackenzie.
Yeah, he'll be 4 by the time we get to that okay. point. So,
and it's the perfect age to bring him there because they actually have this really cool Elmo's World there that has all these really age-appropriate stuff for the little guys.
The only thing I'm worried about is, because I know SeaWorld, last time I went, it's a bunch of shows that you, like, sit down and watch. I'm a little bit concerned about him sitting and staying interested for the length of these shows. So hopefully they're not more than, like, 15, 20 minutes or so.
Yeah, most of them aren't that long, but there is one that you'll have to wait in line for, but it's completely worth it. It's called Pets Ahoy. He will absolutely love it.
Okay, I'll have to make a note of that. So we got a couple of new things, I guess. VLC 3.0.
Yay!
Hey, the document that you put in the show notes was basically saying it was imminent, and well, breaking news, it's now available.
I know, from yesterday to today.
Yeah,
that's
so
great.
That's
a good turnaround time, VLC.
They added a whole bunch more features. Now you have the ability to natively play Blu-rays inside of VLC player, so you don't need a third-party application, and which is really good because I was thinking about getting an external Blu-ray player for my Mac and wanted a way to play movies since I'm now apparently getting into Blu-rays. I don't know why, but that's sort of my thing now.
I think you should start collecting HD DVD.
I don't think that's going to work. It's like me trying to get Betamax. I mean, not going to happen.
but then you could get that really cool external Xbox drive, you know, that they made for like a month.
Oh, yeah. But it's just really cool. It's like you don't get, like, a a GUI refresh. I mean, it still looks the same, but there's a lot of back end stuff that it can handle. But I think with 4.0, I think they're talking about a refresh to the UI. But hey, we got a shiny new updated icon, so I'm excited about that.
Oh yeah, and VLC is one of those packages that I actually deploy through our entire infrastructure because
me too.
If it doesn't play in VLC, it ain't a file.
I know, and it's like a lot of people are distributing, like when videos get distributed to teachers or whatever, they're coming basically H.264 because they've been recorded with somebody's iPhone, or H.264 is just sort of the standard, I guess, codec that people are using for coming up with video now. And so the default player in Windows Media Player, I mean, it can't play H.264 natively. I mean, you can see it, but you can't hear anything. So, I mean, there's like some... And so that's why I just push out VLC, and it's like those weird instances where they want to show a DVD to the class from their computer or whatever. It's like, just use VLC player, because I'm not pushing up that CyberLink, CyberPower DVD or whatever that comes with your Dells. I'm not doing that.
Yeah, and another really good benefit of the VLC player, though, is like you mentioned, those iPhone videos, they still use the MOV containers, and without VLC, you have to use QuickTime, which is completely outdated and unsupported on Windows. And, well, VLC takes it.
In fact, Apple is saying it's just gone, period. It's just gone. They're not even providing it anymore.
It should be. It's, like, ancient. I think it was, like, version 7.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's just gone.
Well, good. VLC is better anyway.
Yeah, it's a lot better. Okay, so tell us our AMD news for the day.
February 12th. Ryzen APUs are released. And that was it. I don't even have a bunch now.
And what does this mean? What are we getting? Are we getting something new?
Oh, it is something new. It's our Ryzen 5 2400G and the Ryzen 3 2200G. So what it is, it's a 4-core, 8-thread CPU on a single CCX, so there is no Infinity Connect communication delays between processor cores. And a Vega 11 GPU. It's really cool. It's a CPU for $169 that actually outperforms an Intel counterpart with an NVIDIA discrete GPU component.
Hey, there we go. I'll take it.
Yeah, $169, and you're outperforming a $200 CPU paired with a $140 GPU.
Yeah, we'll go with that.
And it's super awesome. Low power.
Now I just need Dell to put them in the Optiplex line, and I'll be good.
They do.
Well, I'll have to get those next time.
I know. I'm really excited about this launch and more competition. I'm just excited about it.
Well, I mean, it's coming up. It's almost refresh time. It's time to start reaching out to Dell reps or whatever and start getting quotes for the summer to get some machines. So maybe it's the time to start looking into some AMD stuff. So if I go AMD, when I get these 100 machines and they come back and they're junk, I'm coming for you.
That's okay. I'll buy them from you refurbished.
I'm coming for you. All right. So last week we talked about our like physical tools that we use, like our screwdrivers and our punch downs and all the crap that you had in your bag that you really didn't need. So this week we're actually going to talk about like the software tools that we used. And since you went first last week, I'm going to go first this week. And plus my list is shorter because apparently you do some crazy stuff with your software, just kind of like you do with your
hardware.
So.
It's very fitting. You should try living inside of this brain of mine. It's very confusing.
I mean, sometimes the conversations we have, and it's like, just like the TVs and the little thing that you want me to build, it's like, no.
That's where my brain goes, though. Living here.
I just want to buy a plug that I can turn it on and off with my phone. That's all I want to do.
I just wanted you to solder 4 wires.
No. I had to solder one of my kids' toys at Christmas, and I thought I was going to... And I only burnt myself one time, so I consider it a success.
That was a success.
Okay, so since I have a Windows desktop that I use for certain things, I'm going to kind of mention a few tools that I use on Windows, which then may kind of duplicate to some of the things that you actually use. Then I'll mention some things that I use on macOS and iOS, since I use my iPad Pro and my iPhone here and there, and some of those things will actually be on both locations, and so I'll be able to kind of go through this pretty fast. But the first thing that I really use on Windows is... Well, obviously, there's like Command Prompt and there's PuTTY and those like standard tools that we use in Notepad and Notepad++. But like mRemote is like one of my favorite tools. And that is like really the only reason. This and Dameware, which is another one that I'm going to mention, are really the only things that I keep Windows around for. If it wasn't for these two applications, I probably wouldn't need Windows for anything because I can remote straight into a server and do whatever I need to do. But mRemote allows me to kind of keep up with all of my different RDP connections and all of my different SSH connections, all in this nice, pretty little interface. And I just double click and it connects, and it's real nice. It's just real organizational. I got everything like categorized by like switches and firewalls and network gear and servers and Linux servers and everything. Everything's all right there. I don't have to worry about remembering IP addresses or a lot of times even usernames and passwords, because it'll actually store all that information for me. And so I think InRemote is a real good tool. And in fact, InRemote was around for a while, and then they actually kind of quit development on that, but it kind of spun off into something else that some other people kind of took over. So, and it's actually gotten a little bit better. So I kind of like it.
Yeah, it's a great program. Oh, I do love that one. It's wonderful.
And another one that I use, and which is kind of like, we have it because our teachers, our computer lab teachers, they want some way to be able to kind of monitor their students. And so we use an application called Impero software, and it kind of allows the teachers to be able to see their desktops and kind of see what's going on and interact with them remotely to kind of show them things where they're messing up and stuff like that. Well, there's an admin section of Impero that makes things really easy to like deploy MSI files. They got this one thing called Mimic Script, which is really cool because you can select all of the computers that you want to connect to, and then you click the little Mimic Script box, and then you get this like box, and it's got a bunch of keys and like keystrokes and stuff like that, and you put them into this box and you hit Run Script, and it will actually run those keystrokes on those computers. And so like if you want to open like an internet window on all these machines, you can hit like the Windows key for the search and then start typing in what you want to search, like Chrome, and then hit enter, and then it's like Chrome will pop up on all these machines. It's just really cool. I've used it to push out some software that's like not MSI files. The only thing it doesn't let you do is like when the Windows user account control pops up wanting your username and password, it won't let you interact with that in the Mimic Script window, so you do have to kind of go around. But I mean, that's a lot easier. It's a lot easier to go around and type in your username and password real quick than it is to double-click this file, go here, go here, go here, then type in your password. So, I mean, it's like it takes a lot of the extra steps out of the way. And so I find it real handy. And then there's Daemware, which is basically what I know you use and I use, that we can kind of remotely control computers. I know there's like VNC and some other things. But the thing that I like about Daemware is VNC has to have like a client pre-installed before you can connect to it. Well, with Daemware, it will actually install the client on like first connection. And so it's kind of cool how it does that.
Yeah, it's a goodie. And it used to be a little local software company to us right there around Lake Charles, and SolarWinds bought them up.
Yeah, SolarWinds seems to be buying everything good when it comes to network management.
Yeah, it's kind of like the story with Oracle. Oracle buys everything I love, and then I have to hate it because I hate Oracle.
Well, SolarWinds is not that bad. It's just that they're so expensive.
They just like spam email.
Yes, that's true.
Would you like to download this trial? Please give me your email, your first child, your phone number.
No. But the good thing is they didn't really jack up the price on Daemware when they kind of took it over. It's still pretty reasonable.
Yeah, and in fact, they even kept all the maintenance costs this thing. I think I only paid $45 last year to renew my maintenance.
Yeah, we renew for like three licenses because there's like three of us that use it. So it's really cheap. It was like $146, I think, for all three of us. It's not bad at all.
If you have a network, it is worth the money to have Daemware.
Yes, very much so. If you have to like remote into anything, and it can do even more than just that. I mean, there's a lot of things where you can run like remote command prompt and pull like what software is installed on machines, pull what services are running, restart services. There's a lot that it can do. I think a lot of it can even manage your Active Directory without even doing the Active Directory controls. I think there's a lot of it you can do in there. So, I mean, it does a lot more than what I do with it. So,
oh, yeah.
I know
it's
that.
A good Swiss Army knife to keep.
Yes, it's very good. And kind of along those lines with Active Directory, of course, I use the remote server administration tools, which gives me like the Active Directory console, DHCP console, DNS console, all those different things to be able to connect to my domain controllers and all those different services to be able to control them without having to remote straight into those servers, because it makes it easier to be able to do it from your machine as opposed to having to remote for everything. Now, granted, I'm on a Mac, so I have to remote into something, but it's like it keeps me from having to like remote into it, because a lot of times I just like to stay off my servers as much as possible, just do everything from a client machine. And so, and then obviously vSphere to control my VMware environment. I use the little web UI for the vSphere.
Very cool.
So, but yeah, that's Windows. I mean, I don't do a whole lot with the Windows. I mean, like I said, I remote into Windows for a lot of things, and I'll kind of get to what I use to remote into in just a second when I get to macOS and iOS. But I put that one in the wrong list. I'll have to cut that out. Side note, just got a tangent. Here I go again.
Squirrel.
But yeah, I mean, so I don't really do a whole lot with Windows. In fact, my virtual machine that I keep on Windows, I don't even really have it running unless I absolutely need it, because I'll just remote into the desktop that I have for testing purposes in my office, and so I just find it a lot easier. And so for macOS, the first thing that I put on my list was 1Password. I love having a password manager because it changed my life. I mean, just being able to not have to remember all of those passwords. I just really have to remember just one, and then I know where I can go find all the other ones. And so I just love 1Password. I can't say enough about it. And I haven't subscribed to the 1Password account yet. I'm still using like the iCloud sync from the ones that I purchased. But more than likely, I'm probably going to jump into... I'm not a real big fan of subscription software, but 1Password is one I can get behind. Because then I could run it on my Chromebook and whatever Windows machine I'm on at the same time too. So it kind of gives you some cross-platform.
Something I've always wondered with 1Password. If they add two-factor authentication, do they have to call it 2Password?
No, it's just called two-factor authentication. Because they did add it, because I use 1Password to get those little codes that you have to put in for like Twitter and Amazon and Dropbox and stuff like that. So,
oh, okay.
They did do that.
Instead of like a separate authenticator client, you use the 1Password one?
Yeah, instead of like Authy or the Google Authenticator or the Microsoft authentication thing, I just use 1Password because it's just there. You scan a little a QR code and does its little thing, which I want to know how all that works. It's just so weird to me.
It's like, we should break it down one day.
How does Twitter.com know that these six numbers that my phone generated will let me into this account? I don't get it, but it works.
Time generation. There's a, when you first create that, you've ever noticed that there's a seed number?
Yeah, there's that thing I scan. That's all I know.
Yeah, and that's the seed. And then it's based on the current time, and generally the keys are good for 30 seconds to allow for time drift.
Yeah, it's like that, and the little things that you used to get from the bank with the random number on it. It's like, how does the bank know what number's on
magic.
That thing right now?
It's just magic.
I know, it's just magic. But some other macOS things that I use Numbers from the iWork suite. That's mainly what I do for most of my documentation. I just throw it all in Numbers because it's kind of cross-platform. It's one of those things that's cross-platform. It's on iOS and macOS, and so I'm able to use iCloud Sync to sync all the data so everything stays up to date. I use Text Wrangler for basic text, like text documents, which makes me sad is Barebones, I think the company that does that, has actually like discontinued Text Wrangler, and they've kind of rolled it into its main product called BB Edit, and they basically give you the Text Wrangler features for free for BB Edit, and so you don't have to pay for BB Edit to basically get the same functionality that you get from Text Wrangler. So eventually I'll move to that whenever that just quits working. For consoling into things, I use an app called Serial, which I know I could use like Screen and Terminal and do some weird things like that, but I found that when I did that, I didn't get any like scroll back on the window. It's like as soon as it went through the window, I couldn't see it anymore. And so Serial actually gives me the ability to see that. I mean, and Serial was like the best $20 that I ever spent on a Mac app because it's just so much. It's so handy. Just pop in my little Serial adapter, USB Serial adapter, and console right into those switches. And then of course Terminal, which is kind of like Command Prompt. I use Screens as my VNC client to be able to access the few Mac machines that we have. Microsoft Remote Desktop to connect to the Windows machines. I use an app called Deliveries, which basically kind of keeps track of everything that we order, and they send tracking numbers for. I can kind of keep up with like when things are showing up by just popping the tracking number into this app. Comes in real handy, like when you're expecting things, and so when you're kind of doing your project planning is like when you're going to do things kind of based on when things show up, and so it's just kind of handy to have. And speaking of project management, my favorite app for project management is Things 3 that just recently came out. I find it's like if Apple made a better reminders app, this would be it. I find it great for planning out my projects and doing to-do lists and things like that. And they added, and I've talked about that new email feature that they added to help with my work order workflow. It's just great. I mean, and for iOS, I mean, there's 1Password again. There's an app called Prompt, which basically gives me SSH client to be able to remote into things. Screens again, remote desktop things. I use an app from speedtest.net to test like internet speeds, to check like Wi-Fi speed and stuff like that. I use the Google Admin app to be able to like reset user accounts and those sorts of things. Deliveries again, and then I'm on the beta channel for this app called Shares, which basically gives you SFTP and SMB, which is Microsoft Windows Shares, access in the iOS Files app, which is kind of handy whenever I'm trying to access like home directories and stuff like that, and I need to move files around, and I'm just on my iPad. So that's kind of been fun to beta test. But I mean, that's really it. I mean, that's kind of the main tools that I use to get get things done.
Very cool. So I mean, you do, those are your tools that you keep your Windows environment running with your Mac.
That's right. Yeah. Basically, it's all remote stuff to be able to remote into something.
I have a lot of the parallels to that because I carry around Chromebook, so we're pretty much in the same situation as far as our mobile working. It's everything pretty much remotely because, well, I doubt Microsoft's ever going to put Active Directory Manager or whatnot on Chrome OS.
No. And, you know, I was thinking about that today. It's like, you know, I really could use a native Mac thing to do Active Directory because sometimes I needed to get somebody's copier code, I think, today, and it was just kind of a hassle to remote into something, to open Active Directory. It's like, I don't know. So I'm trying to find me an iOS app or something that can
As long as the what you're looking for is stored in LDAP, you could just use a standard LDAP client, but I'd just be very careful about writing data with it.
Yeah, I don't want to write anything. I just want to pull data.
Yeah.
So, well, still tell me what tools you use.
Well, the vast majority of the tools that I use are just standard tool sets because, well, I am a Windows environment and I do Hyper-V. And I'm a very Microsoft-centric environment here minus the Chromebooks and Chrome OS. So, I mean, most of my tools are just Microsoft's tools themselves. So on Windows, of course, I use remote server tools, but I actually utilize the Server Manager quite a bit in there, that interface that lets you add all your servers in there, and it gives you the status of them, gives you this nice pretty view to manage all the different servers, and it gives you a nice overview so you can see if there's any issues, or it just gives you a centralized point to do everything.
Yeah, I've seen that. That's
I really do love it, but the only thing about it is if you have it set up on multiple things, each one is independent. There's not like a shared space, so yeah, it's all independent per profile. So
the only thing I don't really like about it is just sometimes it just takes so long to load.
The initial load, it does, but the way around it, leave it open.
Yeah, I mean, that's
actually what I do. I just leave it open.
Just leave it open.
Yeah, just don't close it because it'll take forever.
You open it up, and it's like you sit there and you just wait for it to refresh. Wait for it to refresh.
Because what it's actually doing, it's going out and reaching out to the servers over WinRM, the Windows Remote Management Protocol, and grabbing all that status and whatnot. And if you just leave it up and running, it'll maintain the connections and not slow down. But if you close it, it has to refresh everything. So, yeah, if you are using Server Manager and you think it's slow, just leave it open. It'll be better.
Yeah.
And since we are at Google School and Chromebooks and whatnot, I do use the Google Cloud Directory Sync to keep all our user accounts, email addresses, email list, group memberships, device OUs, all that stuff the same as it is in Active Directory as it would be up in Google. And to complement that, I do use the Google Apps Password Sync tool. So passwords changed here in Active Directory, it also changes it up there in the Google Cloud, so it's transparent to the user. That is awesome to use.
Yeah, my environment to that place. I was a little bit worried because I didn't really know how it synced. Did it do by username or what? Because we use some funky usernames out here that it's kind of a legacy thing that we're slowly moving. In fact, in like 8 years, it'll all be gone. But that's kind of how slow this transition is. But when you told me it went by email address, I was like, oh, okay. Well, I can come up with something to put all these email addresses in for these accounts, no problem. And I just haven't really taken the time. It's handy, but I mean, for users, they like having one password for everything.
Yes.
I would prefer people to have two passwords, but that's just me because it's just more secure.
Unless you're using one password, then you only have one password.
Yeah. It's not really, importing users into Google is not real hard, but I mean, it would be handy if it was automated.
Yeah, and what I do is, in basically the way this thing's set up, you set up your parameters to it, and then you literally schedule a task in Task Manager. Task Scheduler, sorry, not Task Manager. Good luck scheduling something in Task Manager. But and then it runs whenever you tell it to run, and I have mine set to run every 5 minutes. And because if you're maintaining it, it doesn't take very long to run. So if you only do it like once an hour and you do have a lot of changes, it will take a little longer than if you're just running it every so often. And so what it keeps me from having to do is I create a user and Active Directory, or automated process will create a user and Active Directory, and then within 5 minutes, the user's in Google.
That's not bad at all.
Yeah, so I mean, it just makes it easier on everybody else. Well, moving along from that, because like I said, I use a lot of standard tools. I use PowerShell and the PowerShell ISE quite a bit, because I do a lot of PowerShell scripting here, mainly because, well, Hyper-V is very PowerShell friendly. Go figure.
Imagine that. Something Microsoft PowerShell.
Yeah, go figure. Yeah, and for all those that don't know, PowerShell is actually cross-platform now. It'll work on Mac and Linux, too, the PowerShell core. And, in fact, this is the last full-blown version of PowerShell that they're ever going to release on Windows alone that they have now. So the next version of PowerShell, the PowerShell core, will actually lose features within Windows, but it'll have a common feature set across all the platforms. So it's going to be a really good scripting language to learn. Basically, it's .NET and Bash slammed together.
Oh, nice.
If they had a really ugly baby, that'd be what it looked like.
Now, what I want to know is, can you run PowerShell in your Linux subsystem and on Windows at the same time?
Yes, you can. Yeah, and then you just get this nice little circle of, I don't know what's going on.
But can you control like your Hyper-V stuff from your Linux Linux subsystem using PowerShell?
Not yet.
Okay.
But those are some of those things that they're going to be implementing. But they're having to extract the .NET features out, because Windows has more .NET hooks than the Linux and macOS builds.
I got you.
But it'll get there. It'll get there eventually, and it'll be awesome, because Hyper-V is not a bad thing. And that actually goes into the next tool that I use. I use the Windows Cluster Manager and the Hyper-V console a whole lot. And I really wish Microsoft had a single console for this kind of management without having to buy System Center. But the way it stands, they don't. So I do have to use both of them. Not so bad. I mean, most of the stuff you can do through Cluster Manager. But if you start changing some of the network configurations on the hypervisors, you will have to dive into the Hyper-V console. But it's not anything to complain about.
Yeah,
it works great.
The Cluster Manager and the Hyper-V console, that's essentially what I do with the vSphere client and for vCenter.
Yeah.
Is make changes to the back-end virtualization environment. So.
Yeah. Next on my list, you'll probably notice a lot of my tools really aren't just pertain to me. It's kind of what I use to do everything. This one's called Chocolatey Nougat. I think we've mentioned it here before. It's a package manager for Windows.
This is the best.
Absolutely love it.
This is the best.
Because, I know. Think of apt-get and yum or DNF or any of those other Linux package managers, Brew if you're on macOS, but for Windows. And it actually works. It's amazing. It's using Nougat, which is a package manager that was originally for the Visual Studios, and because we are clever in the open source community, we decided to call it Chocolatey Nougat, because who doesn't like candy? But it's PowerShell based. So what's really cool is you can do some really cheater things, like set a PowerShell startup script that runs upgrade all. So every time the machine turns on, it just goes and updates all the software you've installed with Chocolatey.
Yeah, and this is like software that we're talking about. Like, it's like Chrome, Firefox,
yeah,
Adobe Reader.
Java even.
Yeah. I mean, all those little things that apparently we need to make the internet work. But always bug you about updates or whatever. Mm-hmm. You can do it all by command line. And I know Java used to be pretty easy to push out with group policy, and Flash is relatively easy, and Reader used to be, but now it's difficult to extract that MSI file. But this takes that deploying that software completely painless. I mean, it's great.
Oh yeah, it makes it brain dumb to manage and up to make everything up to date. Now, of course, you are at the mercy of the package maintainer, so if a Java update comes out that's a critical patch and you're only using Chocolatey to do your updates and it takes him a week, well, you're a week out. But to me, it's quicker than if I was to do it the other way, because I'm so busy, I wouldn't have the time to actually properly maintain those things. But, I mean, it gives me that central point that does all my updates from everything from, like we were talking about, Java to even Notepad++. I deploy VLC this way. I do my Adobe Readers. I absolutely love this piece of software. And if you've not checked it out, go check it out. It is They even have a paid version. If you can afford it, pay it so they'll keep giving us the free version, please, because I can't pay them.
Yeah, but I mean it's really good. And they have they have a GUI that you can install for it too if you need a GUI for the machine.
Yeah, the only thing about
it's just ugly.
It is very ugly, but the GUI is only for that local client. The pay version does have a central management piece, which would be really awesome if there was a free version of. But alas, I get it. They need to make some money too.
Yeah.
But for those things that I can't do in Chocolatey, there's a actual program that I did buy, Matt. I bought a program. It's called MSI Wrapper.
Yeah, I know. I saw this link, and it's like, it's one of those things that's like, hey, I need to convert an HT64 file to MKV or whatever. And it's like, you get this like from download.com. It's one of those random applications that you see. And this, I went to this link, and that's what I saw the first time. It's like, did he legit buy this?
Yeah, I actually bought this. It's exemsi.com.
And it works?
It sounds completely sounds weird. No, it does work. And it actually creates a proper uninstall MSI and add remove program so you can still deploy and remove through group policy.
Oh, well, then I definitely need to invest in this. How much was it?
It wasn't cheap. It was almost $100.
Oh, that's not bad.
No, but the time it has saved me has been... It's been worth it.
Yeah, you could just wrap all those EXEs up and push them out with the group policy.
Yeah. Yeah, it works really well. But my go-to is still using Chocolatey to do it first.
Yeah.
But and then after that, of course, I got lots of custom scripts. I would hate to be the guy that comes in here after me because, wow,
yeah.
I feel bad for them.
I bet.
Uh-huh. And then, of course, the Dameware and WSL, the Windows Subsystem for Linux with Ubuntu, and text editor I like to use besides Notepad++. When I'm writing some of these Lotso scripts and whatnot. Visual Studio Code. It's wonderful, extensible, and it adds IntelliSense to just about any language, so you get auto-completion.
I love that. There's something I use that uses that, too. It's just so good.
Yeah, because if you've been on a Hangout conversation with me when I type, I can't type.
You can't spell.
I can't spell for nothing.
Zero. That's why I do the show notes.
Yeah, and as much as I like to code, dang it, I can't type. So IntelliSense is very friendly for me.
Yeah, absolutely. So what do you use for Chrome?
In Chrome? I use very few applications in Chrome because, well, the browser. I mean, it is Chrome OS.
Yeah, it's Chrome OS. What are you going to do? But it's great at managing all your Google stuff.
It's wonderful for it. I mean, it's fast. It's great. And in fact, like I said, we do the podcast. I record the podcast on it. But for work stuff, program I use a lot called BeagleTerm. It lets me use my USB to serial adapter and get a native serial client. So I can connect directly into the switches if I can't remote into it. I love it. It's simple, free.
Yeah,
works great.
Yeah, I paid for mine. Go figure.
Well, if this one was paid, I would have paid them. It's wonderful.
I know.
I've used the mess out of it.
I mean, for those few instances that you use it, really, just when you got a new piece of hardware, it's just so handy.
Not to
have to like fiddle with terminal and open up a screen session and do all that other weird stuff.
While screen works, screen is abysmal.
Yeah,
I mean, it's awful to use.
Yes,
and developers have to eat too. So
yeah. I don't mind paying. I don't mind paying for good things at all.
Yeah,
not a subscription.
No, I don't like subscriptions, and you won't see any of those on this list. But because the Chromebook that I use does have the Android subsystem in there, so I can run Android apps. I do use the Microsoft Remote Desktop Client for Android on my Chrome OS because it's just good and it works really well. And after that, I use the native SSH client for Google. They actually have one for Chrome OS. You can literally type in SSH:\whack-whack in the URL bar and connect to stuff. Works great.
That's pretty sweet.
Yeah, and an offline text editor. It's just called Text because why bother thinking of a better name?
Yeah, Text. Makes sense.
Yeah, it's got color coding and code folding and those kind of things. So it works. And if I'm having to edit a script on Chrome OS so I don't murder up the tab delimitation or anything.
Okay, so do you prefer white text on black background or black text on white background?
I prefer green text on black background.
Oh, okay.
I'm old school.
I use whatever the default is.
Most of the time I do too, but if I actually go through the effort of changing it, it's going to be green on black.
For terminal, I think the default is white background, black text, but there's a company called Panic that makes some really good Mac software. Well, they released like a terminal theme that's kind of like Panic colors for some of their apps, and so that's actually the one that I use.
Very cool. As long as nobody releases one that's like yellow on white,
horrible.
You know, I'm sure the students, if they get the opportunity, like to do that to you too.
Oh, it's terrible. People are terrible when it comes to changing fonts.
Oh, I know. So I'm moving along. I mean, on my Android phone, because, well, Android, Apple debate. Yeah.
Not going there.
So I use the Google Admin app on there. It's good for getting small things done, but due to the automation, I try not to do too much in there because you start changing things around. When you're using automation tools, things will get a little out of whack pretty quick.
Yeah.
So a lot of the time, it's just for retrieving information.
Yeah, mine is basically, since we don't really sync passwords and stuff, a lot of times somebody will stop me in the hall. It's like, hey, I need you to reset my Google password. It's like, okay, done. I don't really use it to, like, make accounts or do any of that stuff. It's more or less just for resetting passwords. That's really what it's for.
Yeah. And, I mean, it works well enough. I mean, it's a very stripped-down client. I mean, it doesn't let you do any of the Chrome OS management or whatnot. It's basically users and groups. But it works well enough for what it is.
Yes. Works great for resetting passwords.
Yeah, it does work for that. But I just got to be careful about doing that here because of the password sync. It only goes one direction.
Yeah. So.
But after that, I have the Unify video client because a couple of our campuses here use the Unify security cameras. And it's good to export video and check configurations when you're adding cameras, do the viewpointing and whatnot.
So
you get the right shot that you need. And it's a great client. It's a free app, too. And along with that, I use the Unify UNMS manager to manage our wireless bridges and those things that we have here. We have a few of them, so it made sense to actually use the UNMS client so I could maintain the consistent software revisions and whatnot on them. And then, of course, Microsoft Remote Desktop makes an appearance actually on Android where it starts.
Yeah, where it actually belongs, right?
Yeah, where it belongs. But I have a section that I have in mind that you didn't have in yours. I do some self-hosted tools because I do mainly use a Chromebook for kind of some remote management. One of them, I forgot to mention, Keep. Keep is my task manager of choice where you use things. I use Keep. Keep is very feature-less.
Keep does notes too, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does notes. You can write on the screen. You can do those kind of things, but it doesn't have really any advanced features. It's basically you can scribble, you can write a note, and you can make a list. That's about where it ends.
But you know, sometimes simple is best. And really, I'll use reminders and notes for like simple things like that. Like things really only comes into the picture when I'm like seriously, like when we're talking about doing these portable buildings, it's like when I'm planning out these projects and I know that things are going to have like a lot of steps and I know that I have to have a checklist to get things done. That's really where things comes into. It's not for those little quick things or those quick notes or whatever. Yeah. I still use reminders and notes for those things.
Yeah, because sometimes keep it simple, stupid really is the appropriate approach.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, on the self-hosted tools, I use one. It's called Guacamole. It was recently. Well, I say recently, about a year ago, the Apache Foundation adopted it as one of the projects. And think of it as kind of an HTML5 VDI client. It does RDP, VNC, SSH, Telnet, all of those things in a centralized management point where you can just go to a web browser and connect into things with it. You can do users and whatnot on there. I think I'm the only user because I don't allow people to use it. It's my toy.
Yeah.
Back off. But it's a cool tool. If you have a lot of stuff to connect to and a lot of different devices, it makes sense to have it centralized. And it is free. It's open source, so it's wonderful. I don't know why I put our digital signage package in here, but I did, so I'll go ahead and say it. We use Concerto for our digital signage. It's another open source product. And some of those other... Yeah, it works great. You use whatever client you want on there.
Except for those Intel compute sticks, right?
Well, actually, they run Windows 10 really well since the fall creators.
Oh, I thought they did something where they won't support that processor anymore.
They say they don't,
but they do.
But they do really well now. They support it better now that they drop support.
Oh, well, that's interesting how
thing
that goes.
Doesn't overheat and lock up anymore.
Maybe it's like they're definitely not affected by Spectre and Meltdown.
Maybe they just didn't bother to release a patch for them, and they're really affected.
Yeah, and so it actually the patch actually makes it better for them.
Yeah, no kidding. But they work well enough. I wrote a little custom client using Node WebKit for our signage, whatnot. If anybody's interested in it, I'll give that one to y'all. It's cool. Some other self-hosted stuff. I have an Nginx server with the RTMP server module that we use for a video distribution here for like our broadcast journalism to do live television and throughout the school over IP. And again, we're using a custom client on the other end of that. That's an HTML5 client, so it's a responsive design, so it'll go all the way from your phone to a PC and work just fine. I like it. I wish they used it more. But
Yeah, our journalism class doesn't really do video. They just really stick to paper, which is kind of a little heartbreaking, I guess, because I'd like to do a little
ours
bit
is actually a broadcast journalism, so I mean they have to do video in order to maintain the class credit with Texas. So
I got you.
Yeah. For network monitoring, I keep coming back to this one, even though I know there's better stuff, but I just kind of like it. It's called NetXMS. It's very old school. It's just a network monitor, SNMP monitor. It has all the hooks and whatnot to do different things. It's cool. It's Java, though, so it is what it is.
Yeah, Java. Good fun.
Yeah. And I threw this one in there just for you, Matt.
Yeah.
I use a really awesome centralized syslog server.
Yeah, I bet you do.
It's really awesome. I'm a big fan of it.
I bet you are.
And I know it can handle about 9,000 messages a second.
I bet you are. You know, I contacted this guy a while back about doing me a syslog server. I hadn't heard anything about it.
Well, the problem with this company is this: the guy's just a real jerk.
Sometimes I think so.
I know he is. I know him personally. He's a jerk. It's a syslog server that I wrote. It's just Node.js and some PHP stuff. The reason I hadn't gave it to you, Matt, is because I'm rewriting the front end to be Node also, so it'll be easier to deploy.
Oh, I'm pretty sure I'm still running Splunk, but I know the free trial is after, and I haven't even really looked at it.
Yeah, Splunk's great. I wish I could write a Splunk, but I'm not that good. So, and I tried Greylog, but
Greylog is ridiculously expensive. Ridiculous.
It's just too complicated.
Yes.
I'm sorry. I just want some server logs to go somewhere.
This is what I want. This is what it comes to. Like, it's like I'd like to get my firewall logs. I mean, that's kind of what I want out of a syslog server. It's just I'm not really worried about switches or whatever unless things start to go bad. But I just really want the firewall log for like the past 30 days. And when it comes to like network monitoring, I just want something that pings my switches and if it doesn't respond in like 2 minutes, to send me an email. Yeah. I'm not looking for like what SolarWinds does as far as like bandwidth optimization, tells you the CPU load, what the fan speed is, how hot it is. I don't care about any of that stuff. I just want to know if it's down for 2 minutes or more.
And you know, and that's honestly the reason I keep going back to NetXMS is because the default instance just notifies you when the switch goes down after 30 seconds and tells you when it comes back.
That's all I want.
Yeah, that's why I go back to it, because I can apt-get install it and put in the email credentials, and I'm done.
I'm gonna have to look into that.
Because, it's ugly. You'll hate it.
Well, it's Spiceworks had one that was really good. I really liked it, and then I think they discontinued it, and so I don't know if it works or not. It's just, and then it would stop
Spiceworks working. Spiceworks is one of those companies where I try really hard to like their stuff. I want to like it.
Me too. It's good stuff. It's just hard to use because when you don't know whether what you're going to click on in the application is going to take you to something on the application or if it's going to jump you to their website for something.
No kidding. And then it doesn't matter if you give it 32 gigs of RAM and 8 cores. It's going to run like it's on a Pentium 200.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, their help desk was like, to the stuff that supposedly it can do, I never could get it to work right as far as like scanning for inventory and software and all this stuff.
Yeah.
Just the thought, it's like education utopia when it comes to
it is
technology.
And it even integrates in CDWG for ordering.
Yeah, it's like, oh, it's everything we want it to be, but it never works right.
I know. I really, really, really want to like it. I just can't. And I've tried it 100 different times, and I end up abandoning it every time.
And you know, I really don't understand their business model. It's like, hey, we're going to give everything away for free, but we're going to fill it with ads. And then if you buy it,
that is the business model, and that's why it runs so slow.
And if we're going to buy it, we're still going to fill it with ads. I don't get their business model
at all. They must get a kickback from those companies that they integrate purchasing for.
Yeah, it's just... It's just
but that's
weird.
Actually all of my tools. I mean, I have some other stuff that I've written, but I'm not going to put it in there because I'm not ready to share those with you, Matt.
I'll get them from you eventually.
You will. You'll get this one too.
Yeah, I'm still waiting. It's like I gave you the idea.
You did give me the idea, and I threw it together in about an afternoon.
I know. It's like it didn't take you long at all.
No, it was. I think it was like 25 lines of code for the actual syslog server piece. But I have some other stuff. I have a help desk replacement. But it's that time again, users. Please, if you use Edgeforia, request the API feature.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yes, we can get away from it.
I tried to put in a work order today, and I couldn't change the campus.
Was it down?
The drop down. No, the drop down just wouldn't work.
So
I closed the browser, opened it back up, and then it worked. It's dumb little things like that that just. But what else are you going to get for the price of Eduphoria that is that all-in-one package that everything that you need?
Absolutely nothing.
I mean, it's just, it's like a monopoly. And somebody else needs to come along and do something.
There is nobody else that does all of those things.
And it's one of those things like we talked about. It's like they develop it and then they just kind of let it sit stagnant. It's like they're constantly improving like this one piece, like the piece that they have to as far as like the data collection on like testing data and stuff like that. They keep improving that piece and the teacher like evaluation stuff that changes every year. They update the stuff that they have to, but it's like everything else they just kind of leave in the wayside. Like the facilities and stuff, which we used for like checking out Chromebook carts and stuff like that.
Barely works.
I mean, it barely works, but I mean, if it worked, I mean, if it looked better, if it looked like it was updated, if it worked a little bit better, I just want it to be mobile responsive. I just want to be able to check off my work orders and close them in my phone. Well, I mean, because...
That's what I say. They said last year that they were going to move everything to a responsive. So, I mean, if you take out the time that Eduphoria has been down, that they've had to get their servers back up, they've only actually worked on the new code for probably 2 hours.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. It's like 9 times out of 10, I'm going to go work on a work order. I'm not going to have my computer with me. I'm either going to have my iPad or I'm going to have my phone because a lot of times I don't need to bring my computer to go work on a projector or to go pop the RAM out of a machine and pop it back in. I don't need my machine for that. And so I just want to be able to close a work order from my phone. That's all I want.
Didn't they take away the mobile apps from iOS too?
I think they don't work now because they were never updated for 64-bit, so they won't install at all. But
they be gone.
But it's like when you could install it up until iOS 10, it's like buttons were hidden and because the UI was all jacked up and it's like you could, and then it would just crash. So it was just terrible. But that's our tools. I mean, Chris does a lot of complicated stuff, but I do things simple. So if you want to learn how to do things simple, you talk to me. If you want to learn how to do something complex and solder some Arduinos together, I mean, you can talk to Chris. He'll help you out with that.
We'll do a custom application for you every time.
But you go to educatingtech.net/podcast/whatever number this is, 24, I think. We'll have links to a lot of this stuff. I've put together a nice pretty list of everything that we've kind of mentioned and some things that we didn't, because we just don't have time to mention everything that we do. These are just sort of like the highlights. So you can go there and you get this full list. And if you want to reach out to us on Twitter to get more information about whatever, Chris is at Feeks and I'm at Twist of Matt. You can hit the show account at Educating Tech, which I don't think Chris will answer that, but I'll answer it. And I can point you to whichever way we need to go.
Do I even get those emails?
No, I don't think so. You don't see anything. I take care of it all. You just show up, talk, hit record, and send me the file. That's all you do.
That works.
I mean, we got this nice arrangement here. And all I ask for in return is a syslog server, and I haven't even gotten it. We're 24 episodes into this thing. I've done all the work, and all I wanted was a syslog server that took you 2 hours to do, and I can't even get it. I was like, that's...
I'll package it up.
It's like, I'm not asking for much.
No, you're not.
But that's our show this week, and so we'll see you next week. See you later, Chris.
See you later, Matt.